Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchel with Malcolm Hohenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. The president of Turkey will continue in authority after 23 years. More to come. Mr. Erdogan is victorious. What does this mean for the foreign policy of Asia Minor? We welcome Sinan Chidi, a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. He's also an associate professor of national security studies at the Marine Corps University. Sinan, the foreign policy you speculated about before the final vote is now an actuality. What does it mean for the Black Sea Basin? What does it mean for Asia Minor? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, yes, we've been sort of anticipating the result that came out on Sunday, which is a not huge but sizable and decisive victory for Erdogan, meaning that essentially he's going to remain in power as president for Turkey for at least another term. And it should, by law, unless they change it, this should be his final term. Even though technically it's his third, he shouldn't have been allowed to run for this one. He is nevertheless in power. So a few things. I think let's start out with something positive. You know, the president here, Mr. Biden, congratulated Mr. Erdogan's victory shortly after his decisive win on May 29, as did the Secretary of State. But in that phone call also, Mr. Biden impressed upon Mr. Erdogan, the urgency with which Turkey should go ahead and ratify Sweden's membership of NATO. And so I think we'll like to see that coming in the days and weeks, if not weeks ahead, certainly by the Vilnius summit of NATO that's coming up. I think we can sort of see some tap dancing around it with Turkey pretending that it still has some holdouts, etc., etc. But I think overall, we're going to see the next member of NATO confirmed in the coming days and weeks. So that's a positive development. Mr. Erdogan returned once the sale of fighter jets to go through to Turkey is returned for that. Both governments have said these two issues are not tied together, but don't let that fool you. I think they are tied. I think one's not going to happen without the other. But I'm broadly optimistic that Sweden's membership will finally be ratified by Turkey one way or another. So let's see that sort of coming out. I also expect, you know, the next couple of months or so, if I don't necessarily have a definite timeline on this, but just a lull in this sort of antagonistic and fraught relationship between Ankara and Washington. I think I expect to see a sort of a lull. I'm not necessarily call it a reset or like a sort of a turning of the page, but I think both sides of the Atlantic are just kind of tired, as well as the Turkish electorate. Erdogan's in no mood to essentially pick a fight with the United States over anything, even though they have a wide number of disagreements. So I think at that level, just a quiet calm and lull in the bilateral relationship is something positive to look forward to. So that's just on the beginnings, on some positive sides. Look, on the more sort of negative side, I think, you know, I don't expect any breakthroughs to come with Turkey's approach to the U.S.'s position and its partnership, the ongoing partnership with the Syrian Kurds as they continue to fight against ISIS. I think, you know, if anything that the Turkish election has shown, the Turks are very sort of weary of the U.S.'s relationship with the YPG. And, you know, to them, as one of my colleagues recently said, the YPG is to Turkey the IRA is to the Brits and the West in terms of a terrorist organization. And there's no level of public sympathy for that. And Erdogan's really doubled down on that. But another sort of issue is obviously the big other elephant in the room, which is Russia. You know, Turkey under Erdogan has played this game of hedging between Ankara, Washington, and Moscow, simply because Turkey does not feel the need nor the inclination to essentially slap or back the international sanctions that the West has slapped down on Moscow, because it, you know, there's no punishment for doing so. In fact, if it did back Western sanctions, Ankara would likely be more punished by Moscow in terms of sort of economic and punitive measures, and it doesn't want to do that. But more importantly, Ankara feels that its value towards the West, its bargaining powers towards Washington, etc., is much more valuable to it in terms of getting what it wants, or at least a modicum amount of respect, fear, or trepidation from the West, because it does not want, or Washington does not want Ankara to completely go to the fold of Putin's influence. And therefore, I expect the Biden administration at least to continue to humor Erdogan and not really, you know, push it in ways that it's not willing to go.
Malcolm?
What do you think happens now in terms of the opposition parties? You know, people were predicting a victory a few months ago, almost saying it impossible for Erdogan. He's come back, and despite the terrible performance in response to the tragic earthquake and the results, the massive results. So he was vulnerable. They couldn't beat him. Why was that? And what happens now in terms of the opposition? Have they been discredited? Can they reform in some way?
It's a good question, Malcolm. I think you actually hit it on the head. You said some people sort of, you know, postulated that this was the end for Erdogan, and they posited that to his, you know, defeat unequivocally on the notion that the Turkish economy was so bad that people were so sort of fed up with their incomes declining, inflation hurting their pocketbooks, that it was basically a repetition of sort of it's the economy, stupid, the fate that, you know, George Bush Sr. suffered back in 1991. But it didn't turn out that way. What it increasingly turned out to be was, yes, people are hurting economically, but they also prioritize these sort of feelings of strong nationalist sentiments against, so you know, perceived enemies of Turkey, not willingness to give in to the demands of the United States, etc., etc. And in Erdogan, they found a strong leader. And to that effect, the political opposition, led by Kılıçdaroğlu and the CHP, has been discredited in the sense that they failed to pick up on sort of these nationalist sentiments, or a positive way of looking at it is they failed to sort of go down the road of trying to polarize Turkish society along these lines of defense and securitization issues. So what we're looking at, what we're seeing, is essentially, you know, it's a headless sort of chicken. The Kılıçdaroğlu administration of the CHP, since the election defeat on last Sunday, they're absent. They haven't even gone before the cameras and sort of done a mea culpa, or, you know, hinted at what they might be doing next. I think the pressure on Kılıçdaroğlu to resign will increase exponentially, simply because he's old, he's run a bad campaign, and people, you know, that supported the opposition in large sort of measure are upset, and they want to see him gone. So the opposition is licking its wounds. But, on the other hand, they're kind of trying to look forward to what comes next, which is Turkey's local elections about a year out from now, which Erdogan's really gunning for, right? Because he wants to recapture some of these big cities in Turkey, such as Istanbul, Ankara, not because that's just another sort of, you know, crown in his victory, but cities like Istanbul, Ankara, which he does not control now, are big sources of rent, as in rentier sort of politics, spoils politics, right? He wants to be back in charge of those because that's the ability to sort of distribute and really get into the nitty gritty of redistributive spoils gains. And just Istanbul alone accounts for one quarter of the country's entire GDP output. So this is no small feat. And for that, the opposition, you know, is gearing up for a big fight because, you know, we've talked about this on this show quite a number of times. The mayor of Istanbul, Ekrem İmamoğlu,
right,
is the potential biggest threat that Erdogan faces.
Yes.
And he's got a lawsuit pending against him. And if he might, you know, if he loses that election, he might possibly also be banned from politics for life.
Sinan Chitty is a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, and Malcolm Holline of the Conference of Presidents.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com, featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life.
Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at washablesofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.